Welcome to the Infinite Consciousness This Week, and thanks for listening. Today we have with us Dr. Gibbs Williams, and we're going to be discussing an interesting topic on synchronicity. How are you, Gibbs?
Fine, Eva.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So you've done your life's research in synchronicity, so why don't we just...
Oh, only 44 years.
Oh, okay, we got a few years when you get to
I got a few more
kid, huh?
Left.
So why don't we just, this is quite a complicated subject, so why don't we just pretend like my listeners don't have any idea what synchronicity is?
Well, if I may make an overview comment just for a moment, which is, I really have thought about this for quite some time, and I realized in trying to prepare for this 55 or so minutes, it is virtually impossible to get in and, you know, all the stuff that I've done and do justice to it. And in that context, I would like to invite anybody who's interested to please take a look at my website and blog if you're interested. There's a lot of links and papers and other material that'll go into depth. So, like, obviously, we're just going to hit the highlights.
And why don't you tell them what your website is and how to contact you?
My website is called GibbsOnline, all one word, .com. That's the website. And my blog is GibbsOnline, slant, typepad, T-Y-P-E-P-A-D, .com, with a slash.
That's a forward slash?
Forward slash,
Gibbs,
right.
G-I-B-B-S, right?
Yes.
Okay. So why don't you just start off for, first of all, you know, there's linguistics in every subject that has to do with philosophy somewhat, so... Why don't you tell us what your definition of synchronicity is?
Synchronicity, it's interesting. When trying to analyze synchronicities, which Jung, by the way, believes is impossible to do, which is my contribution, I think it is possible to scientifically analyze them. All synchronicities are different, but they have a common structure. The common structure is that there is a subjective event, let's call it A, which has a meaningful connection with some external so-called objective event, let's call that A prime.
So just so my listeners understand this, you mean there's some event going on in mind, but there's also some event going out on in your reality.
Yes, there's a parallel experience of something going on inside one's reality that parallels in meaning. Something that is obviously similar enough to be in awe. And the thing that makes it uncanny is not only is there an equivalence of meaning between A and A prime, but the event often seems to occur simultaneously in time, which is very spooky, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. And where do you think that arises from?
Well, you want me to give you my conclusion. Then this interview is going to be over very quickly. I'll tell you my conclusion.
Well, tell us, go, just tell, talk about what you want to talk about.
Well, if that's all right, let me say the following, that I have done some research into many of the guests which you have had, and we all share a similar interest in this interface between consciousness and intentionality and subjective and objective and... Let's call it science and spirituality, mm-hmm. for want of better terms, and I hope that they will be better terms. And in the process of it, the thing that I think is so fascinating is that synchronicities, and I will use the term synchronicities, but really what they are meaningful coincidences, and they have to be meaningful to a person who has them.
Mm-hmm.
So a person who has a what they think is a particularly meaningful coincidence may fall... flat on somebody else who doesn't bring themselves to it. I believe, I'll give you my conclusion. The preponderance of opinion, as started by Jung and the Jungians, who have an almost 95% lock on the nature and use of meaningful coincidences, and they have what I would call a combination of psychodynamic, in-depth, psychology as one half of their theory. The other half is what I would call a combination of mysticism and esoteric occult and a kind of supernatural other half, and the two combined make for Jung's rather interesting and quite seductive theory about coincidences. Out of his theory comes the idea, essentially, that the universe is, that reality, external reality, is spiritualized, and that what's really happening in synchronicities is that individuals are purportedly getting messages, coded messages, from an assumed realm of absolute meaning or transcendence, or as he would call it, a realm of spirituality. In that sense, there's obviously the assumption that there is such a thing as external reality that is spiritualized, and that messages are somehow transmitted from whatever the spiritual source is, mm-hmm. in coded form, and they go to a particular sender, and the general feeling by multiple people who are interested in this is that the messages are of divine origin, they are personal, they have personal reference to the individual who has them, and that in effect they're being guided and told that essentially they're on the right road and encouraged and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line of my 40-year investigation, I think that's all a very lovely fantasy, that I believe these messages are indeed profound, mysterious, but are essentially generated by the self, not through the collective unconscious, but through a combination of the personal unconscious and one's consciousness, and comes out as a byproduct of what I would call an individual's creative process.
Let me ask you one question, because consciousness is another word that has some language problems. What is your definition of consciousness?
I thought you were going to ask me some difficult question.
I will. I'll get there.
I'm kidding you. I thought about this. Very not simple, as you know, to define. However, let me see if I can give a little bit different slant on it. From my vantage point, consciousness is clearly not a static thing in and of itself. It's a process. And it's a process, I think, of an individual or individuals on a continuum using whatever consciousness, attained consciousness they have, in terms of trying to order their own chaos, trying to actively make meanings for the purposes of adaptation, preserve their beings, do good works, dedicate themselves to some kind of meaningful connection through life, and that it is the, as I said, active process of generating meaningful connections.
Do you think that there are gradients in consciousness?
Yes, and I think one of the contributions that I've made, and you have to understand that this comes out of my work as a psychoanalyst, I have both myself, I think my interest in synchronicities came out of my two failed experiences in college with traditional Freudian analysis, and it wasn't because of Freud, it was because of the analyst, failed to understand where I was coming from. And that propelled me into an immersion in the esoteric occult. In fact, I started out as a de facto Jungian, got highly involved in spiritualism and a pursuit of things like tarot and Kabbalah and astrology and on a rather sophisticated level. So I was very much immersed in that, and I just lost the train of thought. What had you said to me?
Let's see. I was asking you, I can't remember what
I asked. We both got lost.
I was saying, focusing
on... Oh, I know what it was. Are there different states of consciousness?
Oh, gradients, that's right.
In terms of my own self and working with people essentially who were divided, looking for wholeness, I think that for me, this idea of a developmental framework of attained consciousness makes a lot of sense. Just to highlight it, there may be more steps in here but some of the gradients that I've identified are what I would call kaleidoscopic consciousness, moving to symbiotic consciousness, moving to transcendent consciousness, transitional, transformative, transformational, to ego, to what I would call synthetic, to possibly cosmic. There are probably a whole other list of gradients in there, but the important point is that each one of these states of attained consciousness acts as a kind of filter or major organizing filter through which a person tries to organize their own chaos. And depending upon the kind of filter used, you will get entirely different interpretations of whatever the reality is that you're talking about, both inner and outer.
Do you think that synchronicities happen to everyone, or just those that that's arrived at the or have is able to be at the observer level?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't know everybody. Let me give you an interesting statistic, though, in terms of writing my book, which, by the way, I am about to submit in the next week. It's going to be called Understanding Coincidences, Understanding Meaningful Coincidences, Synchronicities, the Phenomena, the Awe Response, the Implications, Explanations, and Uses. Do I think everybody has them? In Googling just the word synchronicities, starting in 2003, there were approximately 7,300 references to synchronicities. That's URLs that had some kind of information associated with it. 3 years later, in 2006, there are 177,000 references to synchronicities. So you tell me. It seems like it's taken off like a rocket ship.
Well, there's definitely some kind of transition going on right now.
Well, I think it's in the air. You know, something like Jung's work was very important. The Celestine Prophecy, of which there's a movie out on the subject, which highlights synchronicities, is obviously very popular. But I think it's hit the public consciousness. And in even sophisticated experiments, such as Dr. Tart and Ryan and so forth will conduct, synchronicities really do seem to be on the cutting edge of this so-called new paradigm.
What is your difference between synchronicities and coincidences?
Oh, I think it's just a question of degree.
Okay.
Let me give you a third thing. What is the difference between a coincidence, a synchronicity, and just something that happens day to day that we notice? And the answer is degrees. A synchronicity, to me, is just an extremely special meaningful coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And meaningful coincidences are just something special in the ordinary flow of making meanings. I mean, we get up, we go outside into the clear light of day, usually, unless there's a rainstorm, and we don't think for a moment about how wondrous that is. I mean, after all, if we got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you see pitch black. That pitch black turns to pure light by, let's say, 8 o'clock. That's a rather amazing thing. It happens every single day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That would seem to be a rather meaningful coincidence, but we don't pay any mind to that. That's not special. Though one might say that's very special, depending upon what you bring to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, let me give you something that happened to me the other day. I was hoping I'd be able to generate one or two interesting coincidences for tonight. So I go to bed with a problem on my mind. And the problem is, how am I going to best distill all of this interesting material into 55 minutes and do what, for me, would do it justice? And I was flooded with information, and I figured I'm going to screw up because I'm going to be so loaded with information overload, I won't know where to begin. So that's how I went to sleep. I thought to myself, just before going there, I thought of the origins of where this interest came from at all, And I realized, as I heard Dr. Tartt say, we had a similar background with this, that all my conscious life, even as a teenager, I was preoccupied with, I guess, the issues of speculative philosophy concerning trying to access essential answers to ultimate questions. Who am I? Where am I from? What am I doing here? Is there a life purpose? How do I know it? That kind of thing. What's the nature of a good life?
Mm-hmm.
Right, that was in my mind. I wake up and I say to myself, you know, that's an interesting idea. What part of what I'm contributing is a philosophical perspective to trying to understand synchronicities. Now, that was in my mind. I get on the subway to go to work. I look up. There's an ad in front of me that's advertising for a school of thinking called Practical Philosophy. And it asked the reader, are you the kind of person who's interested in asking questions such as, who am I? Where am I from? What am I doing here? What's my purpose? All right, to me, that was a very meaningful coincidence. To others, maybe not so hot. To me, in the light of the context and in the flow of time and what was on my mind and that problem, that made me shiver a little bit. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that synchronicities just occur in crisis, or do you think they happen all the time?
Well, part of my research, and let me tell you where my research comes from. I began at 19, largely out of desperation to make sense out of my not-too-easy experience, to keep a not daily but quite extensive journal that I did until 35, for 35 years. In the midst of it, fortunately for me, I recorded what I feel were 19 very significant coincidences, and when I look back to determine what time period, approximately 15 of them occurred in the ages of 25 to 31. So I started this at 19. I had a few scattered between up to 25 years old. I got off point again. Please.
Oh, I ask you if you thought they only happened
when did they happen? When did they happen? One of my major contributions is, and this is quite critical, Jung, who started the ball rolling and actually coined the term synchronicity, did so as a result of having what for him was a shared major coincidence called the scarab coincidence between him and a patient of his.
Mm-hmm.
And out of it, what became extraordinarily important, and I think this is a very important fact, by the way, that for this man who dated everything and went into great detail, there is not one word of follow-up with respect to who his patient was, what happened to her, and so on. And I wrote to a woman who has written the definitive biography of Jung, mentioned that, and she said, you know, that's a really great question. I don't know the answer to that. But one can only speculate why he didn't do it. However, he thought that it was a major breakthrough for his patient. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, we'll never know. What it was a major breakthrough for Jung because he perceived to have a major fight with Freud over the meaning of an important synchronicity that they both shared in Freud's villa, and they had a major fight over it. And Jung proceeds to get axed as Freud's heir apparent, largely over his interest in the occult and his conclusions that Freud was too sexually oriented and not spiritual enough, and they had a huge big fight. Jung proceeds to go into a major breakdown and has what is regarded as a creative illness, in which he goes into himself, plows in to his interior, and comes up with all his major concepts, of which most of his life centered around trying to understand the nature of synchronicities. So it's got a very interesting background. Now, what's important about that to me was, or is, that when I started to delve into his experience and how he arrived at this and his association with a physicist by the name of Pauli, a very important physicist who was one of the precursors of quantum physics,
mm-hmm.
and so on. In any event, their conclusion to what is going on with meaningful coincidences is startling. They concluded that a rational explanation of meaningful coincidences, synchronicities, is incapable of being done. Now, to a philosophy major from Columbia University, who had been originally a de facto union, but who retained a certain degree of critical thinking, this riled me, this challenged me, and I thought to myself, this is absurd, I cannot buy this. In addition to which, in my experiences with a spiritualist church, I discovered, after being enamored, that there was politics in the spirit land, and that everybody might maybe ultimately connected, but they don't like each other all that much. And I began to get rather cynical and jaded, and that propelled me into my own research. It also propelled me into an 11-year psychoanalysis, where I would say that one of the major contributions was the addition of critical thinking into my what previously was more intuitive feeling, sensing kind of way of being in the world. And what I discovered with Jung's provocative conclusion was that there were, for me, more questions raised than satisfactorily answered.
So, I don't know if I missed this or not, but do you think they happen to everyone all the time or just when there's a crisis?
I believe in my particular research, and I cannot talk for other than thoroughly studying me from those journal entries and patients of mine who I would call synchronicity prone. For me, these particularly important events occur at very precise times. And you mentioned crisis. I'm not going to use that term. I would say, rather than crisis, they tend to be occurring when a person experiences a particular kind of problem or juncture in their, let's say, their way through life, their road through life, where they experience a major glitch point or stuck point or what I would call zero point. They may or may not experience it as particularly critical, but it's really hard to move. They feel wedged in.
Mm-hmm.
And what they feel wedged in about is that there is some kind of major issue which has answers or has solutions, but both sides of the solution, to the left and to the right, appear to be mutually exclusive. So if they go one way, they feel as if they're losing out on the left-hand side. They go to the left-hand side, they feel as if they're losing out on the right-hand side, and they feel stuck in the middle. And what becomes critical for synchronicities, I think, is the following, that there are two basic attitudes to stuckness. One is frustration, anger, implosion, shutdown, escape, and so on. Let's call it a sort of a negative way where you just duck and run. The other way is to face the music, face the frustration, face the often anxiety, depression, not knowing, all sorts of negativity, and have a kind of intent of damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. I don't know exactly where I'm going. I'm not sure how I'm going to get there. But if I have any energy, I will find a solution one way or the other. Now, when that kind of motivation sets in, that, to me, and I documented this with tens of synchronicities, my own and others, that to me is the fertile soil in which synchronicities arise. Now, let's say I'm right for the moment. That has important implications because from the vantage point of science, that I think that if my point is well taken, then you could reasonably predict, if you knew the person well enough, you could make a reasonably sage prediction as to the timing in which they are likely to have a synchronicity occur. And those would be the conditions.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, and then when you answer this question, I'm going to go back and combine the two and ask you a question.
Fine.
I'm getting these questions from this paper that you sent me. This statement was, synchronicities occur when the unconscious becomes conscious.
Right.
Now, first of all, what do you mean by unconscious becoming conscious?
Unconscious and conscious, to me, can legitimately be differentiated by virtue of words spoken. When you speak and add language to experience, by definition, you're making the unconscious conscious. Or, putting it in a little bit different terms, unconscious, to me, is something that may be felt deeply, but essentially unverbalized.
Okay, so you're not talking about levels of awareness there?
No.
Okay.
No.
So one thing I do have wonder about is, and synchronicities also happens to be one of my passions too, and one thing that I've observed is the more someone can maintain the observer position, this is from my own life and from a lot of people that I know, the more synchronicities they can spot. But if you've not attained a clear observer position, do you know what I mean by that?
You mean the more aware, the more likely you are to have or to spot synchronicities occurring?
The more you are in the moment, I guess.
I would refine that a little bit, because according to my theory, these things are really very idiosyncratic to the self, and what they are, here, let's take runs of synchronicities, which
was your talking. Let me finish this one statement first.
Go ahead.
So you'll know where I'm coming from. I've noticed in my own life, and I think that I'm pretty consciously aware, and when I mean that, I mean I can step back and observe events going on in my life without participating in them emotionally.
Okay.
And so I can spot synchronicities when they happen, and they don't always happen when something's wrong, but when they do, I mean, they do sometimes, like when I have a problem, but sometimes they happen, and I'll be least expecting it with nothing on my mind because I'll be totally in the moment, and it's just like a pleasure form for me.
You know, I think you're raising a really important issue. I want to go on record in saying that I have hardly the final say on synchronicities, and I am inclined to think that there are different classes of synchronicities and different ways of experiencing them, not necessarily all conforming to my particular theory. I concur. I think your experience is your experience. How can anybody challenge it?
It's like it gives me something, it brings something to my awareness, and I go, uh-oh, something's about to go on here, and I better pay attention.
Well, let me challenge it a little bit by the following. Because I know in the, like, this interface between science and spirituality, there are a couple of pet things that are going on in which there is a huge, big interest in, let's say, quantum physics, with the idea of non-locality and, you know, the language and so forth, in which they're trying to prove everything at root is essentially connected with everything else, and then they make the, I think, huge leap to personal psychodynamics. That's one. The other thing that I think is very critical to bear in mind is that in any perception in which there is meaning going on, or meaningfulness going on, I don't see how a person does not bring something of their own individual psychodynamics into the picture. So that, in other words, I think there's always an interpretive factor, and I disagree with Jung and his followers who believe that there is this so-called transcendent a priori realm of what they call absolute meaning, such that the knowledge that supposedly comes from it is essentially channeled whole into the receiver to be used, I guess, for some kind of enlightenment. To me, that is a very seductive fantasy and totally meaningless. That has no meaning to me. Though it did, it was very appealing at a point where I felt I needed to be guided and rescued by divinity. But there may or may not be such a realm of experience. But from my vantage point, I'm stuck with my own hard-won experience. And that makes absolutely no sense to me at this point in my life. Now, getting back to the idea of interpretation. There are many people who have come forward with an event like the Twin Towers. There are many, many reports of people who have had dreams, premonitions, feelings that the towers literally, we're either going to fall or be blown up or what have you. There's a whole continuum of impressionistic to very concrete. All right. Now, bringing to bear the idea of interpretation. Most people in the United States who had any sensitivity to what happened probably, like me, went into shock and mourning for a good long time relative to those buildings being blown apart.
Mm-hmm.
However, simultaneously, across the world, in many countries, they were dancing for joy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know, Dean
you
Radin
get my
did,
point.
Dean Radin did, had his random event generators going at that time, and at that, you know, they didn't know what to really look for at the time, but when he went back and looked at his research,
yes,
he found that the random generators reflected that something was going on at that time, so the masses knew, but didn't know it.
I know the experience. Brenda Dunn was the person who referred me to you, and I had written, I had sent them a paper on synchronicity many years ago.
I actually saw where you mentioned her on your website.
Yeah, she was extremely nice. I must mention, I got an absolutely horrible response from somebody there who I heard had been let go, thankfully, who blasted me out of creation. I think I stepped on his toes. However, Brenda, I must say, was extremely impartial and very objective and very nice. And I am making a pitch for objectivity, that I am aware that I may be perceived as stepping on certain people's toes. However, I really regard myself as a truth seeker, and I think it is absolutely incumbent to put critical thinking into the mix of intuition and feelings and sensations. I came up with a phrase called numinosity junkie, where it is quite quite possible to get so wrapped up in the wonder of it all that we fail to really try to look at this stuff objectively and scientifically. And one of my contributions is that we are able to do that. I must mention that one of the things that Jung did was to anticipate that Freud and other science types were going to be very upset with his fuzzy occultism. As Freud blasted him one day and said, please promise me we'll get into the mud of occultism, and Jung obviously took offense, and they had a de facto war over various interpretations, a lot of it having to do with the meanings of synchronicities. And Jung, anticipating being derided, came up with what he calls three anti-causal arguments. The essential argument being that you can't experiment with these things because they seem rare and spontaneous, and they occur like the flash of a, what are those things that flash in the night, in the summertime? Whatever flashes in the night in the summertime, synchronicities, you know, are experienced like that. In my analysis and in reading some very sophisticated papers on the nature of causality and how to deal with these kind of events, I think it was Gertrude Schmeidler, who I had met, a very lovely worker and teacher, professor in parapsychology, and she had made the point of fitting these kinds of events into the ongoing continuum of a person's personal life. How do you do that? Voila, I had a journal of 35 years in which I had recorded 19 major synchronicities. So when I began my research in earnest, I took a look at the context in which these various synchronicities occurred, and then realized I got a great method for trying to experiment with these things. And that's when I began to come up with my, what I would call, naturalistic interpretation.
So do you think they're intention-based, or do you think that they're random?
No, I think they're very much intention-based.
Okay.
According to my issue or my theory, that a person has to be at this nature stuck point, and they take a very positive, intentional choice to find, if possible, a creative solution. Or in adaptation terms, since they have a problem which is new, so they can't assimilate an old answer to a new problem, so they have to invent, they have to create a new answer for themselves. And when they do it, that is when synchronicities occur, at least with the people that I have studied. But the answer, or the synchronicity, is in coded form, and you have to decode it by interpreting it like a waking dream in order to get the meat out of it so you know what the message is saying to you, that effect you're saying to yourself.
Yeah.
Getting back, if I may, getting back mm-hmm. to the subway and looking at that practical philosophy thing where I had, the night before, literally had said to myself, all right, why don't we try starting with philosophy and make that one of the important points. That's a major contribution that I'm making, I think. And I see this sign, and it seems to be a confirmation. All right, so for me, that's an important message in effect to myself, but that's only part of it. That's just the tip end. The thing in terms of my theory, my problem was that I could start off many, many ways, but I wanted to start off with a way that I felt did best justice to the complex material. Now, I had the synchronicity. To me, I had found my third path that in between, I could have started out with depth psychology. I could start out in any one of a number of ways, alternate ways. I rejected all of them. It just didn't seem to fit right. When I came up with philosophy, that fit, and let me use the term cathexis. Cathexis is a term in analytic jargon that means to take a relatively dry theory or concept and make it live. And that's what I think is happening with synchronicities, that when you have a synchronicity, it is a marker of a major problem resolution. And if that's really what it is, it results in a major shift of consciousness and an expansion of consciousness, and that usually takes the form of a greater cathexis. It's sort of like you take yourself more seriously, you're on a particular road, and it's not just going on a road, it's going on a particular pathway. I like, for example, the idea of the mandala, the astrological chart, where you have 360 degrees. Let's say you take 30 degrees and you're headed towards a particular house. That's fine, but there's 30 degrees. Which degree are we talking about? If you can be specific, and get as specific as you can, which is what I think synchronicities do, they give you, whether you give yourself, specific information as to what is the right road for you to travel. But it's from yourself. It's not from some external source. It's from you.
Well, if we're all one, there is no us. You know, there's the entanglement of all there is. I mean, how would you account for two people, and this happens a lot, two people that have simultaneous synchronicities that connect to one another?
Well, on the surface, I can't. And if you will...
What do you mean?
I mean, it's very hard to do that.
It happens all the time, though.
I understand that. For me, it would be like a shared synchronicity. Now, I've done this with my wife, where I have used my method of interpretation, and I've said, here, you show me your context, I'll show you mine. And we both will have had a parallel issue, which is resolved in our joint synchronicity, but comes from two different psyches. Now, whether that happens or not, you'd have to have the data from people who would be able to journal in this stuff and be willing to show it to you.
Let me make sure I understand this right. You don't think that there is some higher source that this can possibly come from? You think it all comes from
No, I reject that as a child fantasy. I think it's a very seductive fantasy. It brings in the whole idea of divine intervention, miracles, and so forth. Now, don't get me wrong. I regard myself as a very spiritual person. But the spirituality, from my vantage point, is traced to the consciousness of a one-year-old child, in which, if we talk spiritual terms, I'm talking about the origins of such experiences as faith, hope, love, intentionality, persistence. It's all in age one consciousness. So for me, spirituality certainly exists, but the idea of it being transcendent or otherworldly frankly, at this point, and you must appreciate, I believed it up to my top of my head. I needed it. I don't accept it anymore. And it may be. But
I don't necessarily mean angels or entities or something like that. I mean because we are constantly getting information, you know, because information's encoded within frequencies. And there's another word that there's a problem with, you know, defining. But we are constantly getting information from other people, from the mass consciousness. So how would you know that it's the individuals?
Well, that's a very good question. Let me, while there is a rather sweeping utilization of words like, or application of quantum physics, you know, with the idea of everything connected at roots, so they apply it to, I think, misapply it to psychodynamics, that also exists in such Jungian concepts as the collective unconscious, which, once again, I think is a highly interesting but seductive hypothesis, not, I don't think, a particular reality, but let me give you another term which
we know that it exists.
No, I don't think so.
Dean Radin and Russell Targ, all of those people have proven that it exists.
Let me give you, I don't mean to be so presumptuous as to say they're wrong. However, it isn't proven to me, and let me give you an alternative concept. Try the term collective consciousness. Not collective unconscious. Try collective consciousness. Since the beginning of time, people who have propounded theories or thought about things or made concepts release them seemingly into the ether. There is not one day that goes by where people who are attuned to whatever the concepts are that they're interested in, where from a village in Australia to a house in New York City, tomorrow may occur a joint discovery, which seems as if both people are absolutely synchronous in their points of view, and would look as if there obviously must be, you know, getting some kind of connection from some sort of spiritual source. However, if you look at their biographies and you see what their progression of consciousness has been, you'll probably see that they have majored in precisely the stuff that they've talked about, researched it for years, and it just happened to come up at this particular moment.
Well, you know, Rupert Sheldrake has done some experiments with that, and he thinks that it's all due to what he calls a morphogenic field, and he's done a lot of experiments with animals where an animal on this side of the world learns something, and simultaneously animals on the other side of the world will start doing the same thing. And he thinks that's because of what's going on with entanglement and what people are calling the field, the
I'm half a member. Let me give a little bit more about my idea of the process that occurs in synchronicities. Once you're stuck and you have an intention to find a creative solution, I think what happens is that it stimulates a person's idiosyncratic creative process. What am I talking about? It turns on every bit of informational sources that a person has, roughly characterized by their intuitions, their senses, their thoughts, their feelings. And I think all these streams of information turn on, and like prayer, there is a kind of magnetizing of the problem, and the problem becomes like a searchlight that scans 360 degrees for information that will help to resolve the problem in the most informed way. And the person launches on what I would call a psychological scavenger hunt, where you go from clue to clue. And when the pathway is found and the synchronicity occurs, it is a marker that their particular problem has been resolved through the activation of their personal unconscious equals their creative process.
So do you think that mind is contained within the brain of the individuals, that mind is individualistic?
I do think it's individualistic where it is. It feels subjectively as if it's in my head. I frankly don't know. It probably is in the brain, but that stuff, I don't care. Let me give you a word that makes sense to me in terms of what mind is. In terms of structural theory, propounded by Freud, where you have a division of id, ego, superego, where id is essentially desire, superego is like the internalized law, ego is the organizing principle, and for me, the organizing principle, that which allows you to process the raw data of experience, is for me the equivalent of mind, or mindfulness.
Interesting. So if it's contained pretty much in the brain, that's kind of like materialism. How would you explain remote viewing and psychic phenomena?
I can't. Let me refer you to Mark Twain, and for anybody who's interested in believing that synchronicities may be evidence of telepathy, you're going to get an enormous boost by reading 10 coincidences that Mark Twain had. And if you don't come away feeling that telepathy is absolutely certain, then I don't know if you ever will. It's very persuasive. And I do believe that, once again, that may be one process involved in the formation of synchronicities. It's quite conceivable.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm really saying that part of my passion for this subject is that when you really start to investigate it from different points of view, it seems to me to be inexhaustible. I think in my own mind, I mean, I really have been doing this for 40 years, and I come up with some new thread, mm-hmm. and it opens like new doorways. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, it does. I mean, information kind of drops down in a bundle, and then you got to process.
Oh, it's remarkable. Now, one of the things that I came across was that when I was in a spiritualist group, I was hoping. That the world would be spiritualized and that there was divine intervention and somebody would take care of me and rescue me and give me guidance and so forth. And the first major synchronicity I had was in a consciousness-raising group, a seance, where I think I'd mentioned this to you. It's too long to go into now, but anybody's interested, please read the long paper I have in synchronicity. So it's truly mind-blowing. And I realized all you have to do is make the assumption that everything is one, and that there is, like in Kabbalah, you got the unity, the principle of one, and out of that comes, everything else, and that it's real, and it's informational, and it's good, and so forth. And that lasted until I had a major falling out one day in so-called spirit land, where there were factions fighting, and each insisting that they were right, and the other persons were wrong, and I thought to myself, good Lord, even in spirit land, there's dissension. Mm-hmm. And that made me, along with my analysis and other life-defining events, like at Odyssey House, was an assistant director and had a life-defining experience of both the best and worst of times, I came suddenly one day to think to myself, well, what if everything is not connected? What if the world is not spiritualized? What if we're really talking about human beings, trying to do the best they can with what they've got and stumble along and want to change, but change is very difficult and doesn't seem to happen, sudden, permanent.
The physics has already proven that we are. Because, I mean, like they've done at least one experiment with it, they've found that the electron can be in two places at one time.
No, I don't dispute that for the moment. My difficulty with when the analogy is made that what goes on in the physical world is also going on in the psychological world, I part company because I can't get away from the idea that everybody brings their own meaning to whatever events are going on, and meaningfulness creates more differences than connections.
Do you think that's based on conditioning?
Oh, a lot of it is, surely. Mm-hmm. No question.
So let me ask you this. Do you think cohesion, you're talking about in one of these sentences here, that cohesion, there's a natural tendency to have greater cohesion, expansion of consciousness, unity, complexity, and synthesis.
Yeah, I'm talking about the aftermath of what I observe with me and patients who have these things. Yes.
So do you think the synchronicity brings about the cohesion, or the cohesion brings about the ability to recognize the synchronicity?
I think probably neither. I think that the synchronicity is a marker that there has already been a cohesive experience occurring, and the cohesion I'm talking about, I guess, is like the difference between chocolate melted chocolate cohesing into a really tasty brownie.
Ukraine. I guess what I mean by cohesion is, have you read David Hawkins' Power versus Force?
No.
You should read that. I think it would give you a lot of information about some of what some of the scientists think are going on here with cohesion and
thought and
matter.
I will do so.
What I mean by cohesion is not more cohesive in mind and not scattered and being able to reside more in the moment and maintain.
Oh, yes, I believe that. I think the indices are you take yourself more seriously, you are able to rely more on your experience, that there is a greater unity between all those various streams of information, that there's more vitality, that there's more thoughtfulness, that things you saw in a particular fashion pre a synchronistic experience may look like reversible images quite a bit different after.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think there's really, these things are not small and insignificant. These are big time changes. I might also add that for me, this idea that change can come about instantaneously without working towards it is again, a very nice fantasy that in my personal experience, I wish it were so. I
can tell you that it's so.
It hasn't happened to me. I'm stuck with my own experience, that I find that significant change does come about, but it travels through resistance. It's more like trench warfare than World War II.
Well, Noetic Sciences is actually doing some research on this, on spiritual epiphanies right now. And for whatever reason, between 2000 and right now, there are a lot more people having spontaneous enlightenments going on right now.
I would be very interested in reading the journals of such people, and I urge anybody who is interested in this subject.
Well, there's an interview on my website on the BS Radio.
Start a personal journal. And when you find one of these epiphanies or you find an odd experience, like a synchronicity, date it and stick it into the material. And then try to decode it like a waking dream. Try to interpret it like a waking dream.
It's happening, though, Gibbs. In my life, I do litigation. I'm very black and white, and I did not believe in this kind of stuff. And something happened to me. Most of the people that have had these spiritual epiphanies where it happens in an instant have had something really bad happen in their life. And I've asked this question to every scientist I've interviewed because it happened to me. I went to bed one night being a fundamentalist and thinking, you know, that things were this way. And I woke up the next morning and I was a completely different person. I was in bliss. I had no idea where it came from. It was very much like Eckhart Tolle's, if you've read The Power of Now.
Let me give you the closest I've come to that. I do not dispute your experience. I think it's wonderful. I hope it happens to everybody, and especially me. The closest I've come to it is that when, after two failed psychotherapy experiences, feeling that I had flunked psychotherapy and had immersed myself in the esoteric occult and had tried all sorts of ways to get enlightened,
I don't think you can make it happen. It just either does or doesn't.
Well, and after having a horrible depression, decided I must get into psychoanalysis and searched around for an analyst whose book I had read and had loved and didn't realize I had read it. And when I met him that particular day at his office, the first appearance, I thought to myself, I am home. And I never skipped a session three times a week on the couch, no insurance. And I felt I have found my spiritual home.
Have you read, by any chance, From Onions to Pearls and another book called From Seekers to Finders by a guy named Satya Nadine?
Are you talking about Fritz Perls?
Do what?
Fritz Perls?
No. He was the guy who, back in the 70s, brought ecstasy into existence. Because when people would take that pill...
Oh, I see what you mean. Who is it again?
His spiritual name is Satya Nadine, but it was causing people to have spiritual experiences. And anyway, he was a seeker. He was constantly having some kind of unfulfilled feeling. And the FDA ended up putting him in jail. And when he was in jail, he was so miserable because here he was making like $20 million a month and then suddenly going to prison. And he was 56 years old. And when he was in prison, something happened in an instant, in the blink of an eye. And from that moment on, he was in bliss. And I know this man, so we've talked about it a million times. He was in bliss. And now he resides totally in the moment. He doesn't think about what was or what might be. And he resides in literal bliss all of the time because of that spontaneous thing that occurred in his life. And Cassie Veeton at Noetic Sciences, I mean, that's what she's been doing for the past year, is researching and interviewing all these people that have had these spontaneous and instantaneous enlightenment.
Do you mind if I take an alternative position? I don't want to
fight
you because I believe that these people are probably well-informed and from their vantage point are coming up with those particular conclusions. But as an analyst, I must do my own, I'm stuck with my own experience, and I would say that I have worked with many people who have come into therapy feeling as if they have a spiritual hole in their soul, and for years, literally years, dragging themselves to treatment in the hope that maybe I might have some kind of special quality or concepts or something which they can get themselves organized, but for years can persist in a absolute, you know, feeling of nothingness and the void that you have spoken about. And then one day, something comes together, and it's seemingly spontaneous, but if you trace, as I have, because I have, you know, patient notes and journals, it is clear that they have been processing some of the material in some way that something clicks and they see their whole lives in an entirely different point of view. So that what their experience is spontaneous enlightenment. My experience is, yes, it does appear to be spontaneous enlightenment, but they're forgetting the very hard work that is going into it to get there.
Spontaneous enlightenment is different from that. You feel this.
I guess.
You know what an orgasm feels like? When you become spontaneously...
Occasionally I've had such, yes.
When you become spontaneously enlightened, and I know this from experience, and I know other people that have had, you know, Nadine and Eckhart Tolle for a few, something happens, and you feel for a period of time, and it doesn't usually last but maybe a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and then it kind of subsides, but you feel like you're walking around in an orgasm. There's something that, you know how you kind of vibrate? I don't know how to explain it, but
I think I know what you're talking about.
It's like trying to describe an orgasm to somebody that's never had one, but I'm telling you, it's real.
I have no doubt that for you and people who have discussed it at length and that they are telling their truth. I am trapped by my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
And my conclusion to my studying is, to thine own self be true. I regard myself as a truth seeker, and I think one of the things that has come out of my research is that in addition to intuition and sensing and feeling, there is a great need for critical thinking.
Mm-hmm. I think if you read David Hawkins' work, he's done like 10,000 of these experiments.
I will be happy
using
to
kinesiology. About 0.0.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I have read. Is he the kinesiologist?
Yes.
I have read it. I know what it is.
He says like 0.01% of the people in the world have this experience.
I know what you mean. Yes. I'm not one of them.
You can't make it happen. I mean, I try to make it happen again sometimes because it feels so good, but it doesn't happen.
I understand.
And information comes with it. You don't know where it came from.
If you could induce it my way, if you would be so kind, I would be very happy to experience it.
I wish I could.
If you could, we should stop whatever we're doing and go make $1 billion.
God, I wish I could.
I
don't even know how it happened to me. It just did.
No, that's
right. All I know how to
that.
Say.
That's really
you know?
Very nice. It sounds a little bit like being in love.
Yeah, something like that. Like an orgasm. That's the best way.
Because
you feel like that.
I know what you mean.
So do you think you've got that it's supernatural or a natural phenomena?
Synchronicities?
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's anything supernatural at all. I guess what I'm focusing in on is that events occur and coincide that seem improbable, when you think of all the collisions of experience to experience, the billions and billions and billions of collisions, clearly, in one's life, you're going to have meaningful collisions. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't interest me. What interests me is the person who has to become aware that such a thing has meaning for them, so you're always bringing something of yourself to note that it's mm-hmm. occurring. Dogs, to our knowledge, do not have synchronicities. It takes an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And for one individual, a very meaningful event is a very meaningful event.
Mm-hmm.
To another individual, that same event is ho-hum.
Right. I didn't realize it's 11 o'clock already. So why don't you tell people, I know it just kind of flew by, why don't you tell people one more time how to find you in case they want to read up on what you've done?
I appreciate that. My website is gibsonline.com. And my blog is gibsonline.typepad.com/.
And if somebody wants to email you with a question, where would they do that?
There is an email on my website. I would be very happy to hear from anybody. I've done a number of workshops. I plan to have this book written. If anybody's interested in the possibility of that synchronicity book, tell me. You'll get a special signed copy. And I hope to be doing this the next 40 years.
And what's your email address?
Gibbs on, that's a good question. You know, it's on the website. Let me give you the personal personal email address,
okay,
which is gwilliamsny11@aol.com.
Thanks for being with us, Gibbs. I appreciate
your
interesting conversation,
you
interesting perspective, and I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.